top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies podcast, a celebration of genre cinema.
p.m. A crowded subway train starts its run from Pelham Station in the Bronx. 1:45 p.m. Four desperate, heavily armed men seize control of the train.
Open the door or I'll blow your head off.
Taking 17 people as hostages.
Your attention, please. Now then, you'll all remain seated. Anybody who tries to rise is going to get shot. I do hope I have made myself understood.
2:13 p.m. The city of New York is given 1 hour to come up with $1 million ransom.
You're out of your skull.
No all units stand by on the double.
What's up, Z?
The train's been hijacked.
Millions have read it. Now you can live it. The taking of Pelham 1-2-3.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 452, the Really Awful Movies podcast. The taking of Pelham 1-2-3. Sure Shot, Beastie Boys references this movie, and this is a real banger from the 70s. A really, really amazing, fun, super movie. And what kind of inspired watching this and revisiting it for the first time in, well, decades, I would say, is a sort of antipathy and wariness, and that I've become a lot more circumspect about public transit myself in the last several years, certainly, as I've been returning to the physical office at my work. But I was thinking, actually, in fact, today on the platform, as I was making my way to work and transferring at one of the stations on the Bloor Line here in Toronto, there's this guy wearing a hospital gown, and he was behaving really erratically, and it was really unnerving. And then I thought, oh, I hope he doesn't get on my trolley, because I really don't want to deal with some lunatic right now. And then, sure enough, you know, almost like some sort of cosmic joke, a guy appears next to him who's wearing this gold medallion and a kind of a cowboy hat, and who's swilling beer. And this is at 7:45 in the morning, and I'm going, oh my God, this is going to be another one of those days, right? So, taking of Pelham 1-2-3, a real New York movie. Like, when you think 70s New York, you think Taxi Driver, you think Death Wish, you think gritty, you think gnarly, you think dark and disorderly and unnerving. And it's pretty funny when you think about the MTA, the transit authority that runs the New York City subway. They didn't want to have graffiti shown in this movie, and there was a real sticking point when they were trying to get together with, I guess, Joseph Sargent, the director, trying to see, secure filming locations, and, you know, which I imagine would have been quite the ordeal at the time, and, well, continues to be as well. In Toronto, they have a so-called abandoned station that they periodically open up that's functions as like a transfer point in case there's a issue with one of our pathetic four lines or whatever, and they occasionally open it up for different events, and you can go down there and they'll film a lot of movies there. So it's really super cool, and it's just funny how this film is set up with all these tough-talking New Yorkers who are being visited by a delegation from Tokyo, hoping to learn a little bit about the New York City Transit, which really beggars belief and boggles the mind, because if anything, the reverse would be true. And it really goes to show how the passing of, like, well, 50 years can cause a complete about-face, and you have the system that was once the world's best and the most prolific and largest and wide in its coverage is now simply dwarfed and almost, I don't want to say embarrassed, but the cleanliness and the orderliness and the timeliness of the Tokyo system is, you know, nonpareil. Like, just It can't be beat by anything. And it's funny you have this delegation of people and Matsumoto and all these different characters, and they're introduced to this lieutenant played by Walter Matthau, who gives them a tour of the premises, and they're basically treated like a complete idiots, and in one case, and they're derided as well for with ethnic slur of being Chinamen and whatnot. And then it turns out that their English is perfectly capable, and the tables are turned. And this is such a unique beast of a film, because you have, well, speaking of beasts, let's say the preeminent beast movie might be in the horror space, at least Jaws. And of course you have the guy who played Quint, Robert Shaw, leading this group of gangsters with a plot to hijack a New York City train and hold it hostage to the tune of, and you can do your Dr. Evil voice here, $1 million. It's just, I mean, who could forget the Great White Hunter and Shaw in Jaws? I mean, he introduces himself by way of one of the most unpleasant sounds to the human ear you can possibly imagine, which is scraping nails on chalkboard. And it just, it really digs down into your loins in a way, and really adds tension to that scene, as they're all, the townsfolk have all gathered in this ad hoc kind of municipal meeting to figure out what to do in Amity with this killer shark on the loose and whatnot. And Shaw is just so iconic in that role, and as he is here, I mean, he gives these just wonderful lines of dialogue too, and says something effect of, your locomotive is being held by a group of heavenly armed men, and this kind of thing. And he's got this almost mid-Atlantic type of vibe and accent that he's going with. And there's just so many little gems as you're introduced to this plot, which is still quite captivating, because you're in this subterranean world and you're wondering what the hell is going on. And just the pacing of this movie is so outstanding and so great. Only really bested by, speaking of other subway movies of the time, The Warriors. Warriors come out to play, yay. And we're introduced to 59th Street Station. I can't recall if this is the... It's probably, I want to say, on the, for those who are familiar with New York, I think it's probably on the Hudson side, because I think there's two 59th Street stations, if I'm not mistaken. There's one at 59th and Lex, and another one at Columbus Circle. So, I only say this because I stayed in a hotel fairly recently by Carnegie Hall, and it reminds me of the old joke of, like, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice. The hotel we were staying at was near 57th Street, and it was sort of the as I want to do when I'm ever in a new city. You always want to, I guess, reference yourself and orient yourself to a specific locale so you can use it again and again and figure out your moorings to get yourself tethered to one spot, and then you take it from there. Roughly speaking, around there, I guess 59th Street is around where Central Park is. So anyway, you have these men who get on this train, and they're armed, and there's this little talk with the driver before a weapon is produced, and they clamber aboard, and they separate, I guess, one of the locos from the rest of the trains later on. But it's just really neat how this, we're sort of drawn into each of the hijacker/kidnappers through the naming convention that obviously Quentin Tarantino borrowed for Reservoir Dogs. So the color-coded naming convention of a Mr. Green, Mr. whatever, all the different colors. I want to say it was blue. I can't remember exactly. It's just super cool as well that I think Shaw gives this speech, the Robert Shaw character, about how he's got enough rounds to mow down everyone on this car before they had a chance to get up and bum-rush him. And there's just a really neat lack of tension, I guess, is what you could say right off the bat, because if you're familiar with the New Yorkers, it'll take a lot to rattle them, and a lot of them don't even flinch at the sight of a machine gun, because I guess they figure it's just the filming of a movie or whatever. It takes a lot to dislodge people from, like, there's one character famously, I guess, reading the newspaper or whatever, and barely looks up when they're addressed, because, well, I'm familiar with this on a much lower level myself on Toronto Transit, because there's always some sort of nonsense and lunacy going on, and always some sort of calamity and just chaos. I mean, in one instance, I was going up to visit my parents north of the city, and there was some drunk young woman who I think mentioned that she was, you know, basically borderline, almost passed out, mentioned that she had a gun. And she was falling asleep practically, and one of the more elderly passengers went into the driver's booth, and we sat at this one station for about, it's got to have been 15, 20 minutes, and we were sort of wondering what was up. Before too long, a Toronto task force SWAT team style crew of about six or seven guys with machine guns stormed the train. Someone waved a gun in my face and said, "Get the hell out." I hightailed it out of there. And my heart was really beating quickly afterward. But I mean, this was nothing but the ramblings of some, what looked like to be an 18-year-old, 19-year-old young woman. It was just ridiculous, the kind of overreach and the overreaction to some offhand comment about having a gun. But, and I'm sure that things would be even more magnified because that was then, and this is now, and of course mass shootings are a thing everywhere, and Toronto's experienced them itself. So I've had my share of bad transit experiences, and as a way to sort of, I don't know, exercise my demons, or maybe I'm just a glutton for punishment, I just wanted to watch some transit horror. As an aside, one of my son's favorite shows is called Johnny Shows, and this little kid is probably like, from Brooklyn, he's probably like 6, 7 years old tops. And he's obsessed with trains, and he has all these model trains and goes throughout the different stations. And his good-natured mom is the content creator, I believe, with the dad. And they will take them throughout these journeys based upon the newest toy acquisition this kid has. So if he'll pull out a R train, some yellow line, uptown, whatever, then they'll go there and they'll follow it, and then they'll switch to some other thing. Again, it's all informed by the kid's toys. Like my son is just completely transfixed by the subway system. And how could you not be when you have these dark tunnels and these passages? And just, there's nothing like the New York City subway. Maybe you can get a little bit close with Boston, which is actually older, but there's just a darkness and a seediness that you can't help but be enraptured by, because it's such an amazing scene setting. And there's so many like neat little vignettes here, because what you have is a mid-70s where there's been a shift, a cultural shift in the landscape, and more women entering the workforce, which had been taking place for, well, a decade or more since then. But they have this little tension between some of the superiors and the subordinates, and offhand remarks about, this is what happens when you let a broad in here, and really, really terrific. And just even the mission control, where everything is being monitored, there's so many fascinating little scenes about how they're seeing that this train is going in multiple directions. And the one guy makes an offhand remark and says, well, as long as they stay in one place, at least they're not going backwards. We got a lot of trains backed up here. And which is super cool, too, as again, the hijackers have separated the train. And the name of this film is derived from Pelham Bay, the line that goes up to the Bronx. Yeah, it's just so neat how you have these different dynamics from this, again, very, very insular worlds. And of course, this very cloistered, tight-knit room where this mission control is, where they're just trying to figure out what's happening, and where a chain of command is kind of disintegrated, and the MTA is scrambling to figure out what's going on, and how they can remedy the situation. And there's a lot of good gallows humor, and the Japanese contingents is, it looks like you guys have your hands full, and they basically fuck off, and which is super cool. And it turns out these guys do have a lot on their plates. So rich in character is this one here. Taking of Pelham 123 is just great. I mean, there's a character named Rico, who is played by Jerry Stiller, and obviously Ben Stiller's pops, and obviously George Costanza's father in the Seinfeld show. He's just dynamite here. He's just all real, tried and true New Yorker character actor types, and that I find so compelling and so cool. There was a time and a place for this kind of movie, and it was just so gritty and dark and so unabashedly just really, really grungy in a way that I really thought was cool. I mean, hell, you could throw in, The French Connection is the iconic Gene Hackman film, where there's this unbelievable chase between a vehicle, a car, and a train. It's just this so really rad as well. And I just, again, you can't go wrong with this kind of setup and all the jargon and all the tough talk and these TA people, the MTA. I don't know if they still call it the TA. Maybe they do. I always associate TA, well, with TNA, but also TA, like a teacher's assistant in a university or something. But the TA and the MTA and all the squeaking of the trains going by and just the anxiety that would have manifested itself at the time with the growing crime rate and everything in the 70s and 80s just basically turning to shit in this dystopian hellscape that in some respects some cities are returning to. I mean I can see, just as a long-time transit user, since the first job I ever had at a university, and in university, and as a latchkey kid too, growing up in Toronto, I just basically rode transit all over the place. But you don't see the cast of ne'er-do-wells and the motley crew of characters you see today, and it could partly be due to the COVID lockdowns or mental health crisis. It's hard to say, but there's just so much in the way of tension when you ride the rails these days, and it's prompted me in several instances to just walk home because I'm not too far from my office, but it's unreal. I mean, this one, for a relatively austere budget of nearly, I think, $4 million, I want to say, probably under of it, it really packs a dynamite punch. And it is all due to the darkness and that kind of sepia tone you get from these 70s films. But again, just the characters, like, I want to say it's Rico Patrone is the Jerry Stiller character. But all these, like individuals, I think there's a plumber in one scene because I think somebody loses a wedding band or something in one of the toilets. But just the mystique and the appeal and the allure of the New York City subway system. I mean, there are subterranean dwellers down there, and you can catch some documentaries on YouTube of people who've fashioned lives for themselves just completely out of the prying eyes of the NYPD. It's really incredible how developed that kind of world is too, and really it kind of boggles the mind in many respects, as it does here too, because Toronto's building this major east-west line, and every time I go to work I see this, excavators are digging away, and it's just amazing what they're able to do to carve out these amazing tunnels. And I mean, but what a cast in this one too, as we segue into what we learned. I mean, Martin Balsam, a real powerful presence, Tony Award winner, obviously Walter Matthau. Yeah, I mean, if you're a fan of these ubiquitous hospital dramas, you'll know Hector Elizondo, obviously from Chicago Hope, who is years on that show, but Beverly Hills Cop. Speaking of sitcoms, you have Doris Roberts from Everyone Loves Raymond, and all these kinds of like great people populating this, and it's just these tiny little scenes where in one case, like, there's a Vietnam vet, a black gentleman there who seems to be like wryly smiling when the guns come out, and he seems to be none too concerned with it, especially since he's been shot at and tried to be pumped full of lead through by the Viet Cong and whatnot, and he's racially abused in the first instance, but his character is really memorable as well. And this film is full of just memorable people, and Mayor Al, and you name it. The cast has to be like 50 strong, and it just, you can't go wrong with this kind of setup. And the less that can be said about 2009 version of this film, the better. I mean, it was a complete disaster despite having marquee players like Denzel Washington and John Travolta and obviously the power of Tony Scott behind it. But my God, that thing was just such a crap show. I only managed to survive about 15 to 20 minutes of it before I just couldn't get over like just how grim it was, especially since the original from 74 was so impactful to me, especially at a time when I was really craving 70s film. It was early in my cinema education. I was really deep diving into all of these things, whether it be Cassavetes or the more obscure Scorsese offerings and whatnot. And can we talk about this poster for a second? I mean, just the dynamism and the 30-degree angle of the yellow font, and the machine gun coming out of frame, the gunman out of frame, and we're going to kill one passenger a minute till New York City pays us $1 million. And just dynamite, cool stuff, as the posters were just done so impeccably back then. And they don't make them like they used to is a you know, phrase for a reason. Also, what struck me was, for typically what tips you off for a really bad movie is when one of the characters says the name of the movie conspicuously. But here, they managed to get away with it because there's just repeated reference to, obviously, this line of Pelham, the Pelham Bay line. It's like, you know, the taking of Pelham 123. 123, Pelham. 123, come in, Pelham. So they can't help but have repeated references in a way that I think is kind of cool. It just adds to the mystique of the only way they can communicate. I mean, the Toronto system, I don't even think, is fully retrofitted for Wi-Fi, as far as I can tell. But anyway, just like, you know, apparently this was a bit of a shit show, the production, lots of obviously, you know, problems and bugbears shooting a film like this. And it's just amazing. And you got to say the score is so like pounding. At the beginning, you have this like drum roll type thing to build the tension. This is David Shire, who did The Conversation, was speaking, well, the unbelievably good Francis Ford Coppola movie, and All the President's Men, and doing like these impressive soundtracks, just so badass. I love like movies like this and Speed, where the action is just kept going because you have like a real timeline that the narrative has to be built around. And man, capturing the essence of New York City and the good, the bad, and the ugly, really, just so badass. And capturing a time and space that nobody really wants to go back to, but that you should revisit if you're into this kind of casual dark humor and gritty realism. And this is a badass, this is a banger, as I said in the outset. This is probably a 4 out of 5, maybe 3 3/4. Really seeing the ruthless Robert Shaw and his you know, crazy accent and just compelling as all hell, just badassery up the yin yang. And anyway, hope you continue to enjoy the show. Probably start to play with some of the chronology and some of the time of these episodes, depending on when I'm able to record, which has been increasingly in the evening, which is not the greatest, but it kind of informs what I do here. But anyway, love these kinds of films, wanted to dabble a little bit more on the action adventure side of things, and increasingly do that because this podcast can be increasingly overly weighted toward horror, which sometimes can be a bad thing depending on what your sensibilities are and our show's mandate is. So yeah, talk to you soon. Take care.
Action movies rule. It's because when action directors yell action, they really mean it. There's action. If you're a fan of ass-kicking action films,
you and me, we know so different.
Whether it's the absolutely thrilling one-liners.
Hey, here's a quarter. Buy yourself a personality.
You're a funny guy, Sally. That's why I'm going to kill you last.
The interesting gender politics.
It's believed that all the crimes have been committed by a lone assailant. There's a high probability that assailant is a woman.
And the even more interesting plot lines.
An army of international terrorists has landed. Only one man stands in their way.
They're always wickedly entertaining. If you love action movies like we do, you'll love our book, Mine's Bigger Than Yours, The 100 Wackiest Action Movies.
Come on, punk!
Oh, I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right?
Buy a copy, and we won't be forced to commandeer a chopper and hunt you down with a bunch of ex-Special Forces ops. Thanks.
Thank you.